Hey, Mark, why don't you tell us about our brand new sponsor?
All right, Jeff. Funky Soul Coffee is a 70s-themed mobile coffee bar in a specially renovated 1975 Airstream trailer. The owners, Michelle and Gavin, have been renovating the Airstream themselves and are planning to launch later this summer. Their dream is to create a unique coffee shop experience that inspires you to reach for your dreams, too.
Welcome to Idaho History, the show that digs up the most thought-provoking stories from Idaho's history. Here are your hosts, Jeff Wade and Mark Iverson.
Well, that is correct. This is Idaho History. I'm your host, Jeff Wade, sitting across the table from my tuberculosis-infested co-host, Mr. Mark Iverson. What's going on there, Mark?
Oh, Jeff, I got a bit of the old lung disease there, pal.
Yeah, not feeling great, are you?
Nope, got me some whooping cough or something like that. I was up there near Warren, Idaho this weekend for Father's Day, taking in the waters of Bergdorf Hot Springs, and I thought the waters would heal me, but apparently those walks in the cold after I was in the water turned everything sour.
Dang it. Well, hope you feel better, but we're going to forge ahead with this episode on a historic crime that happened in Idaho. I say it's probably one of the biggest unsolved arsons in Idaho history, if you don't count any of those, forest fire type stuff. But speaking of a true crime in Idaho, Mark, why don't we talk about ghosts and garnets for a moment?
Yeah, Camden and Whitney. Whitney was on, she went on one of my tours, Macabre History of Boise, and we hit it off.
Yeah, so her and Camden have this great podcast called Ghosts and Garnets, Murder in Idaho, and they cover a lot of the same kind of stuff that we cover. I mean, we're more historians with a true crime twist. They're more true crime aficionados with a historical twist, I guess would be the way to say that, right?
Yeah, we kind of lean in similar directions, but, you know, kind of just a little bit of different stances, but, you know, they take a look at some of the things we do, and we'll go more towards, you know, historical topics, and they kind of just, kind of sway themselves more towards crime.
But they're great. They're funny. They're informative. They have some great episodes so far. Like we just did Aryans. They did Aryans, I think, the week before us. I mean, so we're covering a lot of state stuff. What else? They did Claude Dallas. The Murder House. There's one other one that we just were talking about before we started recording. I can't remember. Anyway, yeah, they have some great episodes, so check them out. Mark, where can people find Ghosts and Garnets, Murder in Idaho?
They can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and I'm sure a bunch of other places. But
basically anywhere you listen to us, you can probably listen to them.
Right, and they can also be found on Instagram and Facebook at Ghosts and Garnets and podcast. And they like the spooky and the mysterious, and they like the crime, the murder, the aspects. They really get into it.
Yeah, so check those ladies out. And if you do, let them know that Idaho History sent you.
Wee-hee.
There you go. So, Mark, why don't you tell the listeners what we're talking about in this very America edition of Idaho History?
Well, Jeff, in honor of the 4th of July coming up, we are talking about two fires that happened in Nampa. Both were caused by fireworks in the first week of July.
Yeah, so the first event we're going to cover is known as the Great Nampa Fire. Mark, tell us a little bit about Nampa.
Well, Nampa is a patriotic town. Today, it is the location of the War Hawk Air Museum. That's a very cool museum.
Yes, it is.
And it hosts to the God and Country Festival, and it puts on a parade. Parade America every year.
It's a cool event.
I've never been.
You should check it out.
I will.
But back in the first week of July of 1909, it was really no different. Nampa was preparing to celebrate Independence Day on July 5th.
You say the 5th? I usually celebrate July 4th on like July 4th.
Right, yeah. But that year, the 4th fell on a Sunday, so Governor James Brady issued a proclamation that Idahoans would celebrate the 4th on the 5th, which was a Monday, because, you know, religion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Church and whatnot.
The separation, Jeff. The separation of the two, right? Well, Nampa had a big celebration planned for the 5th.
There would be picnics, concerts, fireworks, and a drilling contest. They hauled in a giant piece of granite and put it in the middle of the intersection of 12th Avenue and 1st Street South, right in front of the Dewey Palace Hotel. Miners would take their drills and see who could get their tool.
Mark, you can't laugh at my script. It's serious business.
Sorry. Okay. Probably cut all that out there.
Nope.
Oh, geez. Miners would take their drills and see who could get their tool as far into the rock as possible.
Red, white, and blue banners flew all over town, and American flags hung from almost every building. Several stores sold fireworks with the intention that their customers would take those fireworks to a safe place to light them off.
But on the 3rd of July, around 3 p.m., the plan went awry when a man walked into Arnold's cigar store at the corner of 12th Avenue and Front Street, right across from the train depot. This store sat on the corner of 12th Avenue and Front Street. If you were standing with your back to the train depot facing down 12th, it would be on the left. Now it's a parking lot, but it used to be known as Arnold's Corner after Jack Arnold, who owned the cigar store.
So this guy walks into the cigar store, and I've seen him described as being both well-dressed and like he's dressed as a tramp in different sources. The man mills about the store for a moment before stopping at the fireworks display.
Mr. Arnold had stepped out of the store for a moment, and an employee of the railroad was behind the counter minding the shop for him. The stranger picked up one of the fireworks from the display and asked how much it cost. The newspaper refers to the item as a bomb.
So the man working the counter finds the price for this guy, and he contemplates for a second before saying something like, "Well, I'm going to watch how well it burns." And he pulls out a matchbook, strikes a match, and touches it to the fuse.
Well, you do have to test out what your mind, don't you?
I always do.
I know. It's better to know before you purchase.
It's like the perfumes. It has a little tester thing, right?
Well, that's why at Boom City outside of Seattle or Everett, Washington, where we go, you know, on the reservation, they let you test things out.
Nice. You know? The snakes and the sparklers.
Right. Oh, and the M1000. No, just kidding. You had to pay for that big time. But anyway, so just then, after he strikes the match, Mr. Arnold walks back into the store. He sees what is happening, and he grabs the bomb in an attempt to remove it from the store. But before he can get it out the door, it explodes in his hands, causing some minor burns.
That explosion also showers sparks all over the building, as well as the fireworks display. Soon, sparks are flying, and the building catches fire. Everyone is able to escape the fire, including the mysterious stranger who started it.
The Arnold Cigar Store was an old wood frame building, as were most of the buildings on Front Street, which allowed the flames to move quickly toward 13th Avenue. We both love to use these helpful, you can find it at Library of Congress and through the Boise Library, but Sanborn Fire Insurance maps, and they show you what the town was made of at that given period in time, how many floors the building had, et cetera, et cetera.
They had fire escapes or fire hoses, stuff like that.
Yeah, and things like glass ceilings and things like that. But they also show you color-coded wise how a building or what the building was constructed of. And so you get, you know, a lot of the buildings are pink because they're made of brick. Blue means a stone frame or a stone building. Sometimes you'll get blue and yellow, as you'll have yellow meaning a wooden frame or all wooden building. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have stone on the outside of a wooden frame building. But on the corner that we're talking about, where Arnold Cigar Store are, they were all basically wood frame buildings.
So we're looking at right now the 1907 Sanborn map, because they only did them every, depending on the city, 4 or 5 years. And so this one, you know, shows the block, and it's pretty good. It actually shows pretty detailed what these buildings were. There's a cigar store. What else is listed down there, Mark, as far as the buildings are concerned?
We had a hotel, a saloon, another saloon,
yeah,
a restaurant, a dining room, yeah, kitchen to the hotel, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you got You got like a back staircase and everything. And yeah, that's right where that parking lot is that goes along the tracks.
Yep. So this was kind of your convenience store at the time. Basically, you get off the train, you have your cigar store, your saloons around the corner. All your brothels were there.
That sounds convenient.
Very accessible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Everything you need right there.
And Mark, you noted the hotel that was in that row of buildings, and that was probably the greatest loss out of these group of wood frame buildings. That was the Commercial Hotel. It was the first large hotel built in Nampa in, oh man, I had it written down somewhere else. I think it was 1892 or so when it was built. Don't quote me on that. And it, over the years, it had served many railroad travelers.
Within just a few minutes of the fire, the Nampa Fire Department had arrived on the scene. Luckily, the fire department was only about 2 blocks from where the fire started. Unluckily, when the firefighters arrived and hooked up their hoses, they found there was no pressure in their lines. That's kind of an important thing, right?
Yes,
there.
It is. Mm-hmm. It turns out that the city had been upgrading the water mains. They're switching from the old wooden water mains to the newer, I think, cast iron mains. So the great irony of the Great Nampa Fire is that the city was undergoing a period of modernization in their firefighting capabilities. Just 2 days before the fire, on the 1st of July, 1909, a bond was passed to build and equip a new fire station. Now, Mark, this is known as an improvement bond, and so it's the type of thing where citizens would go to town hall or wherever, and they would purchase an actual, like, it looks kind of like a folder type deal. It has the text of the bond in it.
It looks kind of like a deed.
Yeah, kind of like a deed. So we have this in our collection. So basically you pay a certain amount of money and then you get $500 back. So I think you'd get 7% interest on it. So this one that we have in our collection, it's actually numbered as 126. So, you know, citizens all over the city would have these. And they actually have these little coupons in them. And the one that we have doesn't have the coupons, but we have another one from later that actually has some of those coupons in it. So every January and July 1st of every year, you could take one of those little coupons to City Hall and they would give you a piece of that money back. So that's how that worked.
Oh, cool.
So that's one of my prize collections in our or prize possessions in our collection.
The rest is just old beer cans.
Yeah, and crappy old postcards.
Yeah, they're cool, though. We have a few gems.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, but without that water pressure, the fire department realized they needed help. So Mayor Ed Dewey got on the horn. He called out to Caldwell, who was able to load up their pump on a wagon and send it over to Nampa. Using Caldwell's hoses, they were able to get longer hose lays to get water from further away.
So I just actually read before we started recording that there was an open part of the Reidenbach Canal system, which ran through First Street South.
Okay.
Just down the street a little bit. So that's how they were able to get water onto the fire eventually. So they got creative, I guess. But Mayor Ed Dewey, he also called the Idaho Statesman's office in Boise, who was able to relay the message to the Boise Fire Department. And I think they didn't have the telegraph in the fire department. It was actually at the Statesman's office. So that's how they had to relay it over.
Just right in that, well, just right down 6th Street.
Pretty
right?
Close, yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine a little page boy running down the street with the message.
Fireman! Fire!
They drove their steam fire engine to the Oregon Shortline Depot in Boise and loaded up on a flat train car. The train was able to deliver the Boise Fire Department to Nampa in just 18 minutes, which good luck trying to make that drive in that amount of time these days.
Right, no kidding. So despite these efforts, the fire spread from the wood frame buildings to the larger brick buildings on the block. Even though these were brick buildings, the underlying structures were made of wood and these frames caught fire. In order to get to the flames, firefighters used dynamite to blow open the brick walls. The explosions broke windows for blocks around.
The fire was so hot that the window frames across the street started to burst into flames. Also, during the fire, people were going from building to building, removing any merchandise or furniture that they could, basically anything that wasn't nailed down. And I just realized I wrote that line in 2 consecutive episodes now.
Yes, you did.
Weird. Yeah. Right. They piled these items into some of the vacant lots in the street, but a lot of that stuff also burst into flames, which had to be extinguished.
Embers from the fire were also landing on some of the adjoining buildings, including the iconic Dewey Palace Hotel, which sat a kitty corner to the burning block. Firefighters and citizens had to climb onto the roof of the hotel and pour buckets of water or stamp out the embers to prevent the hotel from going up in flames.
Efforts to contain the blaze were successful, and it was prevented from spreading. The firefighters spent the rest of the day and late into the night putting out the flames and then mopping up hot spots. When it was all over, 25 buildings were destroyed and 60 businesses were displaced. While the flames were still burning, some of the business owners were busy securing new places to set up shop.
In 1909 money, the loss was initially estimated at over $350,000, which is over $10 million in today's standard. But as the business owners combed through the piles of merchandise and furniture in the streets, they realized that much of it would not be usable because of smoke damage, and that number climbed to over $500,000. And because insurance was just coming into style out west, only about half of that number was covered.
Because they had nowhere to put the merchandise from the buildings, much of it had to remain out in the open. Mayor Dewey deputized 35 men to watch over the items, and they were given shoot-to-kill orders should they find anyone looting.
And when some of the building owners tried to start rebuilding immediately after the blaze, Mayor Dewey had to remind them they needed permits to build. Red, white, and blue tape. During the cleanup, children were paid 10 cents per 100 bricks they could gather and clean. These bricks were used to reconstruct the buildings, many of which were built on the same plans that the originals were. So if you go there today, the buildings were built in 1909, but the bricks are older.
The townspeople of Nampa did not let a little thing like the majority of their business district being burned to the ground stop them from celebrating Independence Day. Many of the events went on, including that drill contest that we talked about. But unfortunately, the fireworks show had to be canceled due to high winds. The scheduled parade also went on with a last-minute addition. Businessmen who lost their buildings or businesses during the fire marched together, holding a banner reading, quote, "The Cinder Club." And probably one of the biggest losers in the fire was Mr. Arnold, owner of the cigar store. Not only did he lose his business, but he also was living in an apartment in one of the buildings that was destroyed.
Damn.
Unlucky guy.
And then he didn't have anything to smoke to ease his nerves.
Right.
The real story of this fire is the pioneering spirit of the people of Nampa, not to let a disaster like that get them down. They did rebuild, and many of these buildings are still standing today.
The Great Nampa Fire is also one of the most enduring mysteries in Nampa's history, up there with the murder of Officer Hugh Nichols and the Nampa figurine or the Nampa image story. And the mystery here, of course, is whodunit. It's probably one of the biggest unsolved arsons, like I said, in Idaho history, if you don't count, you know, some of those mysterious forest fires over the years.
While the fire was still burning, the Nampa Police Department and Canyon County Sheriff's Office were trying to find the suspect, or the mysterious stranger who lit the bomb in Arnold's cigar store. A drunk man was arrested in Oregon a day later, and he even confessed to lighting the blaze. He was thrown in jail, but when he was sobered up, he recanted his confession and was eventually let go. No other suspects were ever identified.
And that's the story of the Great Nampa Fire, but there are some more, you know, kind of side stories that happened within the context of the fire that I want to mention. During the fire, one of the Nampa's residents had the forethought to grab his camera and start snapping photos. H. Lee Jellum was a Norwegian immigrant who owned a photography studio in Nampa. Some of his photos from the fire were sold as postcards, and many more can be found online. I took some time to actually colorize a few of them, and you can see them on our blog. If you go to idahistory.com/Nampa fireworks, you'll see some of those photos there. I'm very thankful to Mr. Jellum for documenting this event, and I don't think we would remember the event the same, you know, without those photos.
No, and in color, too. I like those, the ones you colorized. But yeah. Isn't one of your favorite photos of the fire the one that shows the Grand Hotel burning down?
Yeah. Actually, Mark, I think that... Is it behind the printer there?
Oh, righty, righty. Yeah. Here it is.
So, yeah, this is a cool photo. It's in the blog. Basically, have the Grand Hotel burning down in the background. You can actually, when I colorize it, you can see the flames inside that little archway inside the building there.
Right.
So, that's pretty cool. But what really speaks to me about this photo is kind of this man who's standing in the foreground. I think he's a railroad employee from the way he's dressed, kind of bib overalls, white shirt, hat. Yeah. He's kind of leaning against this fence. It just looks like he's probably just trying to take a break from, you know, whatever efforts he was putting in to help fight the fire.
Yeah, it's like there's no point now. We saved what we could. Here it is out there.
Especially when you have these brick buildings now burning down that you thought you could probably save a few minutes earlier. But also, it's cool in this photo. You can see like chairs and tables and, you know, probably blankets and such kind of on the front lawn of the hotel.
And you can see the wood structure across the street, now charred remains.
Yep.
You know, so the Grand Hotel being made of brick, a nice white and red brick building. And you can see the R-A-N-D of Grand, and then behind a tree would be the G. Very cool photo.
Yep. If you look closely, you can see, well, maybe not in the one I printed out, but you can see the name, J.M. Brunzell, at the top. So, Mark, can you tell us a little bit about J.M. Brunzell?
Well, sure. So, the Grand Hotel was one of Nampa's finest and newest hotels. J.M. Brunzell built the Grand Hotel in 1904 after making money in the mines of the Waihee Mountains. Unlike the Commercial Hotel and the Dewey Palace Hotel, the Grand possessed a beautiful brick facade, although the brick did not prevent the ornate structural structure from burning down. Sadly, just a few weeks before his Grand Hotel burned in the fire, Brunzell's son, a captain in the U.S. Marine Corps, had died under mysterious circumstances in the Philippines. So Brunzell chose not to rebuild his hotel, but did build another smaller commercial building on the block.
So the assertion is that Captain Brunzell was murdered in the barracks there in near Manila in the Philippines.
Oh, wow. Is he buried there, do you know?
Or so he was brought back to Nampa. He's buried at Kohler Lawn. And I actually did a special macabre history tour of Nampa about 2 months ago now for the Nampa Arts and Historic Preservation Commission. One of the ladies actually told me on that tour that Captain Brunzell was actually the first military burial at Kohler Lawn Cemetery in Nampa.
Oh, really? Well, since we're working on a series of cemetery tour books, we should include him in that one for sure.
Most definitely. So, Mark, here's another story, and I'm going to read from a book called Nampa's People. I think you have a copy of this actually at home, right?
I do. They must have overprinted because there's a ton of these things out there. Ton.
You can get them for a couple bucks at the Friends of the Library sale in Nampa.
It's an interesting book. I mean, there's lots of stuff in it.
It's really good. So I'm just going to read this paragraph here. The big fire in 1909 burned up the entire, and maybe before I get into this, I should note that these are all kind of like oral history type stories. So it's whoever, you know, is telling the story. This one's by Ben Anketell. So he says, the big fire in 1909 burned up the entire block between 12th and 13th in front and Main Street. Main also is First Street South. This was on the 3rd of July. There was a family named Crane that lived a block above us by Lakeview School. Mr. Crane had a clothing store downtown. He'd been in the hospital in San Francisco and died. They shipped him back up here, and he was in his casket on one of those old trucks. Mrs. Crane was there watching the fire with us, and she was quite worried that he might burn up. There in his casket. Somebody standing behind me said, what difference does it make? He's going to hell anyhow.
That's hilarious.
It's really cool, the those little kind of funny stories that pop up when you dig into like the oral histories and stuff.
Oh, yeah. It gives a lot of color to the events that are oftentimes black and white, Jeff.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Probably the most interesting anecdote comes from, to us from a guy named Fred Mock. He was the owner of the building at 13th Avenue and First Street, known as the Blue Eye Building. It is currently the home of Holy Cow, Idaho, a restaurant, burger chain.
Great bird, yeah.
Mock, as he was leaving his building, looked back toward the Commercial Hotel, and that was where supposedly one of the entrances to one of the Chinese tunnels was located.
Mark, we talked about that.
We surely did on our first episode, right?
Yeah, we did. So Mock claimed that he and Larry Maloney, the chief of police at the time, had been down in that tunnel, which stretched from the Commercial Hotel, which I don't know if I noted that the Commercial Hotel was on Front Street facing the depot. I don't know if we made that clear yet.
I do believe we did, but okay. Just in case.
So supposedly this tunnel was down in the basement, started in the basement of the commercial hotel, and then stretched toward 13th Avenue. So it would be kind of kitty corner toward the intersection of 13th Avenue and 1st Street. So kind of angled, right?
Right.
But Fred Mock, he said that he looked down into the entrance of that tunnel and he saw several Chinese people trapped by burning timbers.
This tunnel collapsed during the fire, which means that those Chinese people died. But no bodies were ever found, although we don't know if anyone actually looked. Mock didn't tell this story for a few decades after the fact, and, you know, really, Jeff, Maloney could have been full of baloney.
Thanks, Mark.
I've been working on that one for a while.
Just because yesterday was Father's Day doesn't mean we need dad jokes. Oh,
you, they're always a need, you know?
Yes. So, one of the things I didn't put in this script. So the area that this was in, the there's an alleyway, Mark. You can see it on the map right there. What's that alleyway say right there?
Oriental Alley.
So the alleyway that, that stretches in between, so 13th Avenue and 12th Avenue, between 1st and Front Street, is called Oriental Alley. And then around the time of the fire, it became known as Wall Street. Basically, Great Wall of China is kind of what that is named after. This was Nampa's China in Japantown. All the Chinese people and Japanese people gathered in this area. So, Mark, can you see some of the businesses that are in that alleyway?
Right. Chinese laundry, Chinese store, Japanese store, rooms?
Japanese rooms?
Rooms, Japanese, yeah. Billiards. But it's a very small area, that's for sure.
Yeah. Then on the other side toward 13th Avenue, there's another Chinese laundry, a couple other businesses that are labeled Chinese or Japanese.
Ooh, so, and then an opera house was right across there, too. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, and then there's like a little building in the middle that just says Chinese.
Oh, so that building that's labeled Opera House, that's actually the Blue Eye Building. It was Nampa's first opera house.
Oh, okay. So that's from the back.
Yeah. All right. Yep. Okay. Exactly.
Oh, I see.
From how we're looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of confusing when you see it like that. The reason why the Chinese and Japanese gathered in this area was because about 4 or 5 years prior, there was a big fire on the north side of town at a Chinese laundry owned by a man named Sam Singh. Sam Singh's laundry, kind of like a lot of the other Chinese businesses we've talked about, had a basement, and in that basement, people would go to smoke opium. What the newspaper says is that there were two Chinese men down there. They had lit a fire in the fireplace and then got high on opium and fell asleep. The fire in the fireplace got out of control and burned the whole laundry down. And the laundry at the time was kind of that was the gathering place. So after the fire, they all came to what is now called Wall Street. Actually, we're down at Wall Street today taking family pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of funny. Yeah.
It's there's a beer place right there.
So, right? Pre-Funk Bar is right there. Yeah. And then 2C Family Brewing used to be across the street.
Oh, man.
Rip. And then Messenger Pizza is in the building right there. And then that, record store that I love so much is in there too. That's a cool store. But yeah, so a lot of people don't realize that this is Chinatown. So the city, a couple of years ago, were putting together this whole plan to kind of revitalize the area and, you know, make Wall Street even more of a kind of a gathering community area. And they wanted to decorate it with, like, trains and stuff. And they completely left out the Chinese contribution to Nampa, which is pretty sad. So that's something, like, if they do ever go forward with that plan, I'll be at meetings trying to fight for that.
Right. And weren't we just talking about something that was left out? On this podcast last, or something like that, about the Japanese in Boise who built the bridge across the Boise for the railroad,
right? Yeah.
The Oregon Short Line.
Yeah.
Like, just include them a little bit, maybe a sentence, maybe a paragraph.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a cool little bit of history there that's going to totally disappear.
Yeah. If you walk through there, there's absolutely no indication of, you know, what used to be there.
Yeah, include the railroad, but also the Chinese, and we're all good, right?
Now it's just drunk hipsters.
Oh, well, dude, if we need something to go, those people with man buns drinking like double Bock IPAs need to know that they're drinking where the Chinese laundry used to be.
Yep, exactly.
Right.
So, Mark, as a result of the 1909 fire, the city council got together and they banned the sale of fireworks in Nampa. That ban lasted until 1934, when pressure from retailers in the city caused the council to pass an ordinance allowing the sale of fireworks once more. Sadly, though, just 3 years later, on July 1st, 1937, fireworks caused another fire at the Drake drugstore. And since, Mark, we're only about 32 minutes into this, I guess we're going to tell that story as well. Or I'm going to tell you that story since I didn't write it down.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me. I know I've heard it before on the tour. We walked together. I've been on a couple times.
Yes, you have. I appreciate your support.
You're welcome, Jeff. It's kind of I got to because you're my business partner.
That's true. Let me switch over to my script really quick where all my details are at. So the Drake drugstore was in a building at 13th Avenue and 2nd Street South. Now, a couple years ago, it was the Napa Carpet or Napa Floors and Carpet, I think it was called. But it's been vacant now for several years. I just saw a sign today that they're turning it into a bank, which I wonder if the people that are doing that know the history of the building, because it's pretty gruesome.
Right. Weird things going on in that building.
I hope it's haunted, honestly.
I do, too.
If you have to have some tragedy, you might as well have a haunting, right?
Right. I mean, bang for your buck.
Yeah, sure.
It's a bank.
So this building that's there, it's called, well, I call it the Honsted Building because it was built by a guy named Severin Honsted, and he was a Swedish immigrant who heavily invested in Nampa. He built the building in 1935, and one of the first businesses to take residence was the Drake Drugstore. Now, if you look at that building from, again, the Sanborn fire map, I don't have it in front of us, but it, you can tell that it's been divided into three sections. Standing at the front of the store, if you're looking at it, the Drake drugstore was on the left side. The middle was a, I believe it was like a variety store. And then there was a furniture store on the right side. The Honsted, he built several other buildings. Right next door to the Honsted building was a Montgomery Ward store, which Honsted also owned. Oh. He owned another building in town. And actually, he owned like a car lot. And then I think a couple other businesses. But he was also the mayor of Nampa for a term. If I didn't mention that yet.
He's just in everything, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a very successful guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of unfortunately, Honsted's buildings had a bad habit of catching fire.
Hmm.
The Montgomery Ward store that was right next door, like I mentioned, that's now a parking lot, that had caught fire at one point. The Drake Drug Store caught fire. The businesses next door caught fire. And then the Drake Drug Store caught fire again. And, that last Drake drugstore fire is the one I'm telling you about right now. Actually, no, I think it caught fire three different times. So it was a bad.
What's this guy building? Is I mean, somebody either hates that guy and wants to build that, burn down all his buildings, or
so he had a choice to build with stone, lumber, or straw, and he chose the straw. Like three little pigs. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah. I was like, it's too late for adobo buildings back then, wasn't it?
Yeah. He's out there with the mud. Anyway, like I said, in 1934, the city council had decided to repeal the firework ban that had put in place after the 1909 fire. For 3 years, Nampans were free to blow stuff up on the first week of July, like we do, you know.
Hells yes.
Hells yes.
Hells yes.
So July 1st, 1937 rolls around, the Drake drugstore, it's ready for Independence Day. I sent you a little while ago the advertisement that they had in the newspaper for fireworks on sale in the store.
Yeah.
They had crepe paper banners, flags, everything. Right at the front of the store was the fireworks display. And so the day that this happened, there were about 30 customers in the drugstore. But there were more people in the building because the building had a mezzanine built in, and it was like just a single staircase that goes up. And actually, if you look in the building, there's a similar one built in there on the far side of from where the Drake drugstore was, but kind of creepy to see that in there. But that was built basically to be just an office for the retail space, and the Mr. Drake was using it as his office until he decided to sublet it to a lady named Helen Barr, who wanted to use it as a beauty school. This beauty school was established. There were, on the date of the fire, there were a bunch of ladies up there. So about 4:30 p.m., there were some kids playing near the front of the fireworks display at the front of the store. Now, witnesses would accuse this group of kids of lighting a firecracker and throwing it back into the display. At least one of the witnesses said that it was Mr. Drake's daughter among this group of you know, delinquents who set this fire, allegedly. But either way, the display exploded, shattering the glass in the window. Now, there was a Napa police officer who was walking across the street. He had been... he's a World War I veteran, and he'd been in France. And he said when the front of that building exploded, he felt like he was back in France during the war. The blast made the walls of the neighboring building shake. Some people thought it was a earthquake. Fireworks shot out of the shattered window before a wall of flames erupted from the front of the store. And then it got sucked back in toward the customers, who now had to run out the back door to escape. Now, Mark, in pharmacies, you have some volatile, flammable chemicals. So when the flames hit that, it basically caused this long, sustained explosion, basically.
Especially back then, I would imagine.
I wonder if some of that stuff's still in there in pharmacies today, though.
Did they have Aquanet back then?
I hope so. It's kind of a bad joke, considering what happens next.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Totally unintentional. Yeah.
But the flames blocked the staircase leading up to the mezzanine. And actually, one account I read said that the flames were creeping up the stairs. So basically, that was the only escape that the ladies in the beauty school had. They couldn't get out any other way except for these four windows in the back of that building, and they were only about I think they were 2.5 by 2.5 square windows feet. Okay. Obviously, the ladies are very frightened. They began screaming. One of the voices heard above the terrified cries was that of Mrs. Ethel Miller, who was searching for her 4-year-old daughter, Catherine. Now, someone realized that the only way out was through those windows, and they used a stool, broke out those windows and the glass in the windows, and these ladies began jumping out of that second story window onto the cement of the alley below. Now, a couple of ladies actually were caught by the arriving firefighters. The last few were rescued with ladders, but many others suffered broken legs and ankles when they hit the ground. There was like a conduit that was on the building, an electrical conduit, and some of them were trying to like shimmy out that, but you know, they slipped and fell that way.
Ouch.
Now, Mark, let's talk about permanent wave machines. You've seen these, right? There's one at the Canyon County Museum in the train depot.
Right. Mm-hmm. They look like futuristic / medieval torture devices at the same time.
Right. So basically it was clamps that were heated by electricity, and ladies would clamp their hair and then wrap their hair around it. And that would give you that kind of popular wavy look that, you know, movie stars had back in the, you know, 30s and 40s.
You had to earn it back then.
You really did.
Just, do it at home with your little, what do they call those?
Oh, the perm kits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember those from the 90s. Uh-huh. Yeah. I had one lady on the tour actually tell me that she had used one of these machines back in the day, and it just made your hair like crispy, and like if you touched it wrong, it could break.
Yeah, it looked like it might do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, look these up, folks.
Yeah, permanent wave machines. Check them out. Creepy. So when the fire was going, you know, these ladies were connected to these hot clamps, and so they were either ripping their hair out or burning their hands trying to get the clamps out of their head. So as a result of this fire, 6 people died, including Ethel Miller, as well as her 4-year-old daughter, Catherine, who was found at the bottom of the staircase. And then there was Miss Helen Daniels, who she was one that was attempting to jump out of the window, But as she got to the window to jump out, she asphyxiated and fell back into the store.
No.
Yeah, one of the victims who actually did jump and then hit the ground, she was 16 years old, and then she died in the hospital later on. So,
The jump or because of asphyxiation?
I don't know if there was any injuries or if it was from asphyxiation.
Because we've been out there, and I mean, it looks like a jump that would really hurt, but that you would survive.
You could survive it, yeah. But I don't know what other injuries she had, maybe from the smoke or whatever, from the fire. Mm.
So seven altogether. Or was she one of the six?
She was one of the six.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You'd never know walking by there that happened.
So they actually bricked over the windows. And so it's just like a brick facade now. And that door that in the back is also gone. They've put another door on the side after that. Because the Montgomery Ward building was there at the time. So it would have been blocking that side.
Sure.
So, yeah. Remember when we were walking down there and the fire trucks were sitting there?
Right.
That was kind of creepy.
Yeah. This is... nobody else will know why this is odd, but...
Yeah. So, kind of a little, I guess, tragically funny side note to this whole story. Miss Helen Barr, who was the owner of the beauty school...
Yeah.
She married the widower of Helen Daniels. And I actually... through Facebook, talked to one of the descendants of the family, and they refer to first Aunt Helen and second Aunt Helen.
Okay.
So it's kind of one of those strangely funny things.
Did they ever find out which kid did it or if a kid did it?
No, they never figured it out for sure. I guess so. That's another mystery.
Yeah.
Map of history. But I think it pretty much gets pinned on the daughter of Mr. Drake because she was involved in that group.
I hope she got grounded at least. Oh, my goodness.
Take away the Nintendo.
Although, you know what? All the my friends and I did with fireworks back in the day, we just did it in nature, near water, like beaches.
Right.
Lake beaches, ocean beaches, Puget Sound,
So, my dad, we hunted with black powder when I was a kid. One of the days I was screwing around with my friends with the black powder.
As one should do.
So I'd poured a little bit into this rock, kind of had like a depression in it, and I lit it on fire. And then I'm like, well, that didn't do much, so I'm going to pour some more in. So I took the jar the black powder was in, the plastic container it comes in, and I poured it in there, and there must have been a hot ember or something in there. It explodes in my hand, and the jar goes flying up in the sky.
Oh, man.
So...
what would you hunt with black powder?
Deer.
Okay.
Yeah, muzzle litter.
Oh, I thought you were like blasting. I'm sitting here thinking you're like, dynamite.
That would be awesome, actually.
Anyway, all right.
But to wrap this story up, so a couple things happened. The town actually got together and they had a benefit for the victims. So that's another, thing that we can be proud of, Napa of the past for is getting together as a community to help out their neighbors. Drake Drugstore had a fire sale. Remember I sent you that advertisement for the fire sale?
Oh, yeah. I was like, what? Yeah, I don't know to laugh or not.
They really did. Yeah, so I wish that was a joke. But the mayor and the city council actually got together and tried to ban fireworks again. But and it's kind of a complicated story, but the city attorney basically read the wording of the 1934 ordinance. And he's like, well, we can't really ban fireworks because of how the wording was done back in 1934. So, Mark, you probably noticed on your way in tonight that there's actually fireworks stands all over already. And we're still a couple weeks out from the 4th of July. So that's why we have them on every damn corner here in Napa.
Right. So same argument everywhere.
It's true.
We had them in Seattle, Washington, right when I was there,
Yeah.
But we at least took them to, we took the illegal ones to the water.
Oh, good.
Then we'd get somewhere else. I'd save up and waste thousands of dollars all on, more like $300.
Yeah.
Still. Yeah.
Well, my kid's birthday is on the 1st, so I always buy fireworks for him for his birthday.
The unfortunate thing about, don't take away my freedom to be stupid, yep. You know. And I refer to myself as well. I've been guilty of this myself. So yeah. Thank God a fire didn't happen when I was doing it. But damn.
Right. Anyway, well, Mark, do you have any thoughts on these two events?
They probably should have banned fireworks. That's what I'm thinking. But you know what? I mean, Nampa is, you know, getting in line with a bunch of other places. Now, it wasn't 4th of July necessarily, but, mm-hmm. you know, Idaho City burnt down a bunch.
A few times, yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, the Idaho City you go and see isn't what was originally there, obviously.
Didn't it have a fire like 2 years after it was built?
Right.
2 or 3 years, like, yeah.
66 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you had Boise. I mean, there are several fires where, you know, like Idaho and 6, or used to be Garrison, you know, up to the fort, mm-hmm. all wooden tenement buildings and things like that, right where City Hall is. There was a big fire there in 1872. You know, so, I mean, there were tons of fires that just reduced entire blocks to ashes in certain cities. So,
yeah.
The Seattle fire, San Francisco fire, I mean, you know.
This one, like, it's so, the Great Nampa fire, it's so weird because, like, this guy lit the fire and then took off, as you probably would, right? But during this time, there's actually a couple bombs found in the area. There's one on the tracks between Nampa and Boise. There was one over in Caldwell near the courthouse, all within, like, I think, like 2 or 3 months of the Nampa fire. So I almost wonder if maybe this guy was out to do a little anarchy and then probably got spooked when the fire actually happened and took off. And then there was another one in Meridian where Governor Brady was speaking. They found the bomb after the speech was done. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so like there's this weird rash of bombs being found in the Treasure Valley around this time. So I'd like to say maybe they're connected. Kind of my conspiracy-minded brain thinks they're connected, but who knows? You know, no way to say.
Oh, well, then if we want to talk about bombs, Caldwell takes the cake.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, there is kind of a history of bombs being left all over the place.
What year was the assassination of Governor Steubenberg?
Was it 1906?
Yeah, so this was a couple years after that. So there was one of the bombs that the people did, or someone, the newspaper mentioned that it might have been Harry Orchard's, but I don't think there was any real connection because it would have been out there for a few years had it been his.
Oh, nope. Okay. So the Governor Steubenberg was assassinated in December 30th, 1905.
Okay, yeah. So 4 years out.
Right. Which is this history of Idaho with explosives.
Yeah.
I mean, up north you had during the Coeur d'Alene Mining Wars, which this was tied to, explosives, bombs being rained down on the mills and, you know, all this. So it's
yeah. Well, they did find one of his bombs. I can't remember what town was that. Do you remember? Behind the fire station, they found one of his bombs.
Who's Harry Orchard's?
Yeah.
I know they found one, I thought, that was at Idaho Hotel.
Maybe. Yeah. He supposedly went and planted the bomb, but then he decided he didn't want to kill anybody else or something.
And he disarmed it, yeah. And I have pictures of the bombs. Maybe I have to go find those.
And then the same thing happened on the train as in Nampa. He got on the train with the governor, and then he backed out because he saw other people were there.
Right, yeah. So, which, duh, it's a train.
Right,
yeah. You know. But anyway, yeah, and he blew up the mayor, or sorry, the governor in Caldwell.
Yep. I guess we need to do that story, too.
Sure thing.
What else was I going to talk about? I think that's it. That's all I got.
That's all I got. All
right. So with that, we'll actually, we're going to take a break for a week or two, right?
No, I have one that I'm working on about POW camps and work camps in Idaho and, well, parts of Utah, but Idaho specifically. They were all over the United States during World War II.
That's interesting because actually right down the street from us is Nampa High School, and that's one of the fields that they worked back in the day.
Ooh.
So, yeah. And then they have their camp up here at Deer Flat somewhere.
Right. Right. So, yep. Yeah. They're kind of shipped around and used where they are needed.
Yep. So, yeah, I'm actually excited that you're doing that one because I'm interested in learning more about that one.
Likewise. We'll have to go out to one of those sites, too.
Heck yeah.
All right. The more you know.
The more you know. All right. So, with that, we're going to sign off and we'll see you later.
Sayonara.
If you want to get a hold of us, send an email to info@idahistory.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Ida History. You can visit us on the web at idahistory.com. Ida History would like to thank our listeners, sponsors, and contributors. If you want to know how you can become a contributor, go to idahistory.com/podcast. Please consider giving us a rating and review on your podcast app. I'm Tom Hart, and this is Devil's Counting.